Dutch and True Crusaders, you are now listening to Vox Arcana, a production of Hollow Street Media. By the will of the immortal Emperor of Mankind, it has been decreed that the following broadcast of Vox Arcana may not be suitable for all ages. The views expressed on this Voxcast are solely those of the individual providing them and do not represent the opinion of this station, website, or any affiliated partner. Audience discretion is advised.
Attention on the battle fleet. This is Captain Ramaskos of the Imperial Star Cruiser Vox Arcona. Please listen carefully to the following announcement.
In accordance with the Codex Astartes, we hope that you have a productive trip to Arcona and arrive with the will to deliver the Emperor's judgment. Thank you.
Greetings, Crusaders. Welcome to Vox Arcona Mission 28, recording on Monday, February 29th, 2016, and coming to you from the Battlefleet Charon in the Segmentum Obscurus. I am Gigabyte, and I am pleased to share the fleet's Vox Relay with Orkta. So, how you doing, dude?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks very much, Gigabyte. I'm just trying to, stay alive at midnight.
My little son's birthday, his first birthday, so he's made level one in the MMO of life.
well done. It's nice to know that people actually have a life and have children outside of work, because that's all I've been doing.
Yes, indeed. So, you been in-game much this week?
Unfortunately, in the game of life, not Eternal Crusade. No, I'm slacking, to say the least, when it comes to Eternal Crusade.
That's fine. I have to admit, I've been trying to get in as much as I can. I'm playing a game or two a night, trying to do one Loyalist and one Chaos, at the very least. Try and get some time in-game and just trying to see how much feedback I can give the team.
You know, that's a really good idea, especially for people that run a podcast about it. I'm probably slacking. I have gotten a few games in, though, so I will make sure to jump in with any poignant comments I can make.
No worries. And on that subject, let's look at what's been going on in the world of Eternal Crusade. We had Into the Warp 54 come out, obviously Friday. First and foremost, though, we had a new map added to the game. Torias Refinery, or Torias, I prefer Torias, but Torias, the lag, oh my god, so much lag.
Yeah, you know, I haven't been able to play it. I've jumped in, it's just never come up in the queue. I'm really disappointed, because I was super looking forward to a new map.
Yeah, and we were saying just before we start recording, that you would expect that if a new map comes out, they would want people to play it. I've had it come up about 3 or 4 times a night. It's strange that you've not had it come up once.
Well, in its defense, I haven't played a huge amount. But yeah, it just never came up in the rotation. I'm with you there. They probably do want more people testing this, and so it should be higher, like in number of plays per rotation or whatever. But yeah, just no luck.
Well, all I can say is you're lucky. You're lucky you haven't been playing it, because inside is fine, like in the buildings is fine. Outside, when you're in the rain and stuff, I think the rain is too much for my system right now. Because it's too much lag. Yeah.
Well, is that hardware lag?
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. I've got a feeling it might be server side, because a lot of other people are complaining about it as well. So I've got a feeling it might be on their end on that one, and they might have to have a look at that.
Well, yeah, let's be fair. Eternal Crusade is not exactly known for its good performance and stability.
That's very true. But no, it's a nice map. It's just a shame that that is causing so many issues with lag and stuff. Although I have to admit, it's the only times the times I've played that map I've always been on the defensive, never been on the attack. And from what I understand, it's a lot easier if you're on the attack than if you're on the defense.
Okay, well, I'm going to play the complete noob here. Break the map down for me. So far, all I know is there's attack and defense, as always. There's an inside and outside, and it rains.
So basically,
what's happening?
Yeah, no, so basically you've got 3 points, ABC, and it's domination, I think it is, where you can just take the points in whatever order you like. One of the points, I think point A, is at the very top of this massive, huge tower thing, which obviously, given Eternal Crusade and other maps like Black Bolt Defense, Defense Station, the points that are really high up tend to be really easy to take or to hold, because you've got an elevated position from which to shoot. But the really nasty thing about point A in Tarius is that leading up to point A, there's an entire it's an entire open area where you have to run through to get to point A in the first place.
Oh god.
Yeah, it's a killing zone.
I've got to say, when you were talking about the high up tower, my instant thought was you could probably just spam the plasma cannons in mortar shots, and that would be pretty devastating.
Yeah. It's definitely a map where it rewards you for being on the attack, but I think the biggest thing really is you need a lot of assault troops to be able to get up that tower.
Right, interesting. Do you specifically mean because of their shields?
Well, no, just because of the elevated shooting position and the fact that assault troops can could bypass that killing zone.
Oh, okay, assault, not ground assault.
No, jump assault. Yeah. The other 2 points are inside, so they're not too hard. You can hold those pretty easily, but it's that point A that's the real killer.
I've got to say, it sounds like a perfect map for my favourite weapon, the Stalker Bolter.
Oh, yes, definitely. So yes, we had the Imperial Fists are on their way, which I was a little bit annoyed about, because we haven't got the Wolves yet. Damn it.
Ah, you know, I'd like to join you in this hate, but I actually don't much care for the Wolves.
Yeah, well, you're dead to me now.
Well, yeah, that's fair.
No, Katsu will be happy because he's a Fist player, as will his brother. They're both Fist players, well, Fist successors.
Well, who doesn't like a bit of fisting?
That's true, that's very true. But as soon as I heard that, I was like, no, give me the wolves.
Now, the fists are yellow, right?
Yes, that's right.
Mm.
The banana marines.
I don't know, I have nightmares of painting yellow. So at least this way they're textured yellow. Don't have to paint them.
The fists have a fist as their symbol, and in that fist is a banana. and the Alpha Legion are coming as well, which will be very cool.
Or are they?
Yes, indeed.
You never know with the Alpha Legion.
Indeed. I don't know. I quite like to see what they've done with the Alpha Legion's colour scheme, because they're supposed to have like an iridescent blue on their armour.
Alpha Legion. Alpha Legion are the ones that are like covert, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't know they had the iridescent blue. I thought they were just almost greyed out. Like,
no, it's kind of an iridescent blue kind of colour.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Almost a two-tone, actually. But, we had some interesting Eldar concept stuff. I say interesting, it was kind of like, well, duh. And they showed off some model sheets, basically, like, armour progression. Nothing we haven't seen before, quite honestly, with the interview we discussed last episode. But the first thing I thought when I was watching that part was like, yeah, we know what the Elder look like, and we know what their armor and weapons look like, so let's kind of do. Can we see something in game? That'd be good.
Yeah, I've got to say, you know, when a studio shows me something not in game, not in the in-game engine, all I can think of is the Half-Life modding scene in 99. because that's all the mods then put out, like a crappy render of a gun, and that was it. And you always knew back then, until you get an in-game screenshot, it's not a real mod. And I'm kind of feeling the same way about the Eldar.
No, totally. And it's interesting to see that they're doing the weapon design in a kind of a modular fashion, so you can kind of mix and match parts for your weapons. But I think everyone kind of assumed that they would be doing that that way anyway.
Are we talking purely cosmetic here?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I did not assume that. I mean, what is that? That seems pretty cool to me. I mean, you can't do that with the current Space Marines, can you?
Not yet, no, but that's because the Rogue Trader stuff hasn't come out yet. They've always said that the Rogue Trader store will have mods and things like that available for you to add on to your existing weapons. I've always kind of assumed that they would be doing it in a modular fashion anyway.
Oh, okay. When I was checking out the Rogue Trader store, mainly I was finding alternate weapons, you know, so instead of the Maximus pattern bolter, you can get the Gladius pattern bolter or something like that, as opposed to add a scope or add a gold plating or something.
Yeah, now that stuff's been on there for a while, but they have mentioned in the past that as we go on with the Rogue Trader store, there'll be more bits and pieces on there that you can purchase to add on to your existing weapons.
Okay, yeah, I'll be looking forward to that.
No, definitely. Should be quite interesting to see what they put up there. The game will be getting another melee update, because it kind of needs it.
Yeah, it's they haven't quite nailed it, have they?
Not quite yet, no. Apparently they're going to be changing stamina to durability for the purposes of blocking and defensive bash, especially with the storm shield. So as you take hits, it will take away your durability of the weapon rather than your stamina, which would be quite interesting.
Okay, so effectively, if I have a shield, the shield will get hit, and then but then I can still roll out the way. That's all that really means.
Presumably. Which would be good, because that kind of helps when you're close combat only.
Oh, it'll be great. Except that damn ground assault. Ugh, they have been wrecking me recently.
Yeah, I'll be coming onto that in a bit. I've had an issue with traitor assault recently, but I'll be coming onto that in a bit.
Oh, okay, well, again, I'm always also queuing, and I always get put on chaos.
No worries. Well, the other thing in the melee update, apparently, is that aim and lock will be coming to everyone, regardless of whether you've got a smart pistol or not. So, apparently, everyone will eventually be able to either aim or lock, whichever one you want to do.
Okay, that sounds a bit odd, just because, obviously, now you do have smart pistol or normal pistol. Presumably that's being removed and you just get pistol then.
I presume so, yeah. I mean, it would have made more sense if they'd have just done it straight away. And I think they did have a few people asking questions about, you know, doing that to begin with. But I think their kind of stopgap was to put in the smart pistol as a way to try and see if that would actually work and be popular.
Now,
so I think it has been.
What do you think the purpose of this is? Like, why have they made this move?
I think it's just to get some more variety in the game. And possibly, like I say, they may have found that people have been changing their loadouts, is the word I'm thinking of, to incorporate the smart pistol as opposed to the normal bolt pistol.
Don't most of the loadouts come default with the smart pistol?
Not that I experienced. No, I had to go in and change it.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Oh, my bad.
Yeah, no, I had to go in and change mine. But to be honest, when I saw the smart pistol, I was like, yeah, why would I have the normal one?
Ah, well, I was exactly the opposite. I always swapped everything to not being the smart pistol because I heard somewhere that the not smart pistol did a little bit more damage.
Yeah, I actually think it says that in the description in the game, actually. I think
that's probably where I heard it, if I'm honest.
I think it probably does say that, actually. But no, I think, I don't know, maybe it comes down to a playstyle thing. I mean, I've always been an MMO player. I've never really gotten into the whole FPS genre. So I've always been more for the more towards the lock thing. I'd prefer to tab target and lock on and just continue shooting sort of thing. I've never really been into the whole skill shot thing where, you know, in FPS and stuff.
Yeah, that's fair. I've mainly been going with the not smart pistol because I just felt that's the way the game should be played. I don't know if that's true. In fact, I've never really done much of the aiming and locking on at all. So I can't say much. I've always had to aim.
I mean, to be honest, I've not had to use the bolt pistol that much anyway.
No, yeah, this is a bit of an irrelevant argument. I hardly use it. Yeah.
There was talk of a team killing system coming in, which would be quite nice. This friendly fire is a thing in Eternal Crusade.
Oh yeah, I get very annoyed.
I can see once we start getting into, like, properly getting into the Steam early access thing, I can see people coming in and for shits and giggles going around killing their own team. So it'd be nice to have some people getting punishments for excessive team killing. That'd be quite interesting to see what they do, actually. In fact, if I remember rightly, just going back to Warhammer Online for a second, actually, if I remember rightly in that game, if you tried to go to a lobby area and try to kill lobbies, you got turned into a chaos chicken.
Oh, yes, I remember that. That was good fun.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. You know that game is still around, right?
Oh, really? I thought it died a death.
It had very much died a death. However, about a month ago, I was thinking about it, channel, and I was going to record that, but I can't find it. However, some group of industrious modders have brought it back as a private server, so it's free
fantastic.
To play. Yeah, I'd highly recommend that. Obviously, it's a little bit dated now.
Oh, of course.
It has a pretty great PvP system.
Absolutely. But yes, no, that'd be very cool. And apparently the team killing system will advance over time as well to become more accurate. Apparently, I think Brent said right now it focuses on amount of kills and vehicle kills. And I think he said they'll advance it over time to include, like, the amount of damage done and stuff like this.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good thing to get into the game. Needs to be in there. And yeah, more accuracy is better.
Yeah, team can't really argue with that thing.
Yeah, it is.
Apparently, the Rogue when I can speak properly. The Rogue Trader.
Yeah.
It's coming back. Finally, because I want my Frost Axe, I want that limited edition item to come back because I was stupid enough to not buy it at the time.
Ah, okay, yeah, so you know that obviously for the Founders, etc., there were relic items, right?
Yeah.
You know, items that went up and were a limited amount.
Yeah.
I didn't get any of those. I'm quite sad. Quite sad about that. Yeah.
I kept doing the whole thing of, oh, it'll be fine, there'll be more. Oh, crap.
I know, right? You're like, it's a digital item. It won't sell out. It turns out, apparently, digital items do sell out. Who knew?
Yes. Who knew? Well, they do when the company backing your game says, you can do this item in-game, but you have to limit the amount of people that get it.
Yeah, that's really annoying.
That sucks. I hate you.
However, at the same time, I'm a little bit of an elitist, and so I'm kind of all for it. Even though I don't have any of the relic items, I like that they are there, and I can't wait to get my hands on a relic item to show it off to people. In a very subtle way, just to let them know that I'm better than them.
No, definitely. That'd be very cool. I just wanted to add on the end here. I don't know if you've got anything else you wanted to add on, Orkta, but I have had an issue in game recently. Well, I had one game recently, I think it was last night actually, where I had to question whether there have been people hacking in-game. I had a particular game where I was playing Lawless and there was a traitor assault guy. Not going to name names because I can't remember what the bloody hell his name was anyway, but there was a guy playing traitor assault who always seemed to be at the right place at the right time to be able to get a kill, like an easy kill. Now obviously anyone who's played Eternal Crusade knows that your opponents don't show up on the map unless you shoot at them, they shoot at you, or someone pings you. And this guy ended the game with 41 kills and 5 deaths.
I see.
Now I can perfectly imagine that someone would be that good, but it was just the fact he was always in the right place at the right time.
Okay, so 41 kills, 5 deaths. I've seen that kind of thing before. However, they were usually sat in a predator that nobody ever took care of.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know that the ground assault guys are pretty tough, or the Mark of Nurgle guys. But that's tough. Hard to say. To be honest, I can see that kill death ratio being legit. But I mean, obviously I wasn't there. I don't quite know what you mean with the right place, right time.
Well, as I say, I mean, from my personal perspective, I'd be lining up a shot, for instance, and just out of nowhere, he'd come up behind, a couple of hits, dead. And then I'd respawn, and then he'd go off and do the same to other people. He was literally almost running around the map, never stopping. And very few people could take him down, by the looks of that. I think, if I remember rightly, the next closest person in terms of KDR was, I think it was about 35 kills and 15 deaths, which was a little bit more believable.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting one. I mean, to be honest, at this stage, I'm a bit skeptical that there are hacks, just because, I mean, it's in early access. If you put a hack in now, it may get deleted next week. But at the same time, hackers like to hack things.
Uh-huh.
You know, I could see it happening.
Well, it's something I think the team should keep an eye on, certainly. It has been known, even people in early access have been known to hack the system and add in extra bits and pieces, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that being more of a thing when the XP becomes permanent and will actually carry over.
True. But that's just my little rant, shall we say.
No, that's fair enough. I don't have much to add, except since the last show, a lot more time to fully digest the Melter Gun. And no longer is it a weapon that I just write my name into the floor with. I've got to say, it's very tasty up close, isn't it? I've been killed by it many a time. And it's actually quite difficult to deal with, I'm finding.
Completely, yeah. No, if you get the right sort of situation, you can take someone down in seconds with that thing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, completely. Almost to the point where I'm almost finding the Storm Bolter a little bit of a... I mean, why would I take that now?
True. The only one thing I have with the Melter Gun, actually, I've noticed that it depends. If you hold down the fire button for too long when someone's getting close to the end of their life and, you know, getting to the bleeding stage, they will actually disintegrate into nothing. So you've got no execution opportunity.
Oh, really? Okay, that's interesting. A very nice touch, I feel. I mean, it's a melter gun, you know?
Yeah. It's just a shame that you lose the opportunity for an execution or something.
Maybe I'm just getting worse at executing people, but I've got to say, recently, every time I've gone for an execution, I've been killed.
It's become a thing recently. People are saying, don't go for executions because you leave yourself open for too long.
No, completely. I mean, the dev team has even said, they've gone on notes saying that they are going to shorten the amount of time an execution takes.
Yeah. And it's a shame, really, because an execution is supposed to be that feeling of exaltation, you know, that, die, you fucker, you know, that sort of thing.
I don't know. I think it's a very fine line to walk. I mean, because obviously an execution is nothing if you're doing a one-on-one fight and you execute them, no big deal. And then when you're in a team fight, there's just no chance to do it because it takes so damn long. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a nice idea. You get double the points. So obviously you get 100 points for killing and then 100 points for the execution. But, yeah, I don't know. The execution does heal your armor to full, does it?
I don't think so, to be honest. I just think it takes so long that your armor naturally regens anyway.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Well, if it gave you some sort of full heal and, I don't know, a buff for 10 seconds or something, I don't know, just something to make it a bit more worthwhile.
Well, I mean, the problem with that is it gives people all the more reason to stop you doing it, doesn't it?
yeah, that's fair. I've got to say, I love it when I see an enemy executing one of my battle brothers, because it means I can kill them.
There you go. Cool, so, yes, moving on to the Warhammer 40,000 universe as a whole, as a globe. On the main site, some very nice things going down on the main site. They have a new Space Hulk-esque board game coming out called Deathwatch Overkill and its expansion pack Ignition. Oh, this looks sexy.
Man, it is great. I mean, Games Workshop knows how to do miniatures. Everybody knows that. But I've got to say, even for them, this is a really exceptional box. Like, it's just really great. Honestly, I could just look at the miniatures for ages. I think they've done an amazing bit of modelling on the Gene Stealer cult. I mean, people have wanted those for ages. They're all great, though. That's the thing, they're all brilliant models.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm loving them. I suppose, if one had to be critical, the whole of Kill Team Cassius are very busy. You know, there's no blank space on that model at all. It's very jumbled. That would be my only issue. But at the same time, each individual model is packed with flavour and colour.
Totally. Yes, and if you didn't catch that, it's Kill Team Cassius, as in Ultramarines Chaplain Cassius, and his Death Watch Kill Team. Very awesome. Going through those models is just, like you say, Octa, it's just absolutely amazing. Each model is just filled with character to the brim.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've got to be honest, they really have outdone themselves with this one. They've done great things in the past. I mean, you had the Battle at Kalth, which was brilliant value for money. If you were looking to get into 30k, I mean, and that's exactly why they did it, because it's how many, like 40 Marines plus 5 Terminators plus a Dreadnought. Bargain. I've picked that up, haven't even touched it, but if I ever want to do 30k, I'm sorted. And then you had the Execution Force, Assassinorium Execution Force.
Yep.
You know, that was very much them just dipping their toes into the water, it seems. But again, lovely models, beautiful kit. But yeah, I think they continue to up their game. However, each time the price has gone up. This time we're sitting at £100.
Yeah.
And even though it's a great box set, and let's even imagine that the next one is greater, I don't think I would break the £100 mark.
Well, it's £18 extra if you want the Ignition add-on as well.
Well, that's another thing. I may be wrong, but I think that Ignition book...
That's a book, isn't it?
I believe so. It's just a collection of short stories about each of the Kill Team Cassius, just to give you a bit of flavour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm reading through the thing now. A 384-page hardback novel detailing the origins and assembly of Kill Team Cassius. That'd be quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, I suspect that would be a pretty good read, to be honest. And I don't know if you've managed to see any of Black Library's small hardback books.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, they actually look quite nice. Yeah. And normally hardback books, you know, they're bigger than softbacks. But these are standard softback size. And yeah, I quite like that. It's a bit novel.
Oh, totally.
That was a terrible pun. A bit novel. Jeez.
I was going to gloss over that one.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you were mentioning before we started recording, Games Workshop put up a playthrough video for Overkill on their YouTube channel.
Yes, that's right. For anybody that doesn't know, and is kind of like me, and remembers Games Workshop from, you know, the past 30 years, then you may remember the Games Workshop is a little bit reticent, shall we say, to really get involved with social media. And that's because they're terrible at it. However, they are taking strides with their YouTube channel, which is such a bizarre thing to go for, but okay. And they're actually putting out good stuff on there. I'd very much recommend taking a look. They're giving you a whole bunch of painting tutorials, which it seems to be an obvious winner. You know, how to do bases, how to paint certain models. Really good stuff. And yes, they've also added the playthrough. They're playing through one of the campaign missions. And yeah, it's just real time. So I think it's an hour and 15 minutes or so. Along with a little side interview running alongside the games with the players saying what they're doing, why they're doing it, etc. But it really is just seeing how the game is played, you know, how it really plays out.
Which yeah, definitely, I'm gonna have to give that a watch.
Is fine, you know, that's, I know, it's definitely worth a watch if you're interested in Death Watch Overkill. But I don't know if you've ever seen any of Fantasy Flight's tutorial videos, perhaps?
Yes, yeah, I have.
Now, those are slick. You know, those are very nicely done, very concise, to the point. Lovely graphical overlay. You know, it's all there to keep new people that don't know what's happening interested and teach them how to play the game. This is not. And as Games Workshop, I feel they should really try a bit harder. But I do like to hate on them. So, you know, if you're just there to see how the game plays out, then this video works well for you.
Yeah, totally. So I'm going to give that a watch at some point. Yes, so Forge World. Not a massive amount going on over at Forge World, except for tanks. More tanks. And more tanks. they have some new tanks coming out for Imperial Guard, and they look so hench, it's ridiculous.
Now, in the last episode, you showed me a delightful tank, which was massive. Does any of them beat that?
No. Although there is a new pattern for the Storm Sword.
Oh, okay. Interesting. To be honest, and it almost feels weird to say this, but Beauregard tank armies don't do it for me.
No?
I apologise. However, I do love the Baneblades. They are great.
I have to admit, I'm not a fan of the armoured column, as it were. But these do look very nice. I mean, the new Storm Sword Arcurian pattern looks very nice. We have a Praetor armoured assault launcher, which is kind of like a Whirlwind, if anyone remembers the Whirlwind from the Space Marine Army. It's basically an Imperial Guard version of that. A Crassus armoured assault transport, basically a more hench version of a Chimera. And a Macarius Vulcan, which I can only describe as like a Predator with just like two, what look like, Storm Bolters. They're Heavy Stubbers, sorry. I'm just reading the thing now. They're Heavy Stubbers on the top, and they've got sponson mounted Heavy Bolters. So lots of killy death.
Lovely. That's exactly what you want on your tanks.
Mm-hmm. And they're all about 110, 120, 115 pounds.
So pretty cheap then.
Oh yeah, yeah. As tanks go.
Sadly, yeah.
In video games, Battlefleet Gothic, the pre-orders for the game are up. 10% off if you pre-order it now. Available on Steam, duh. Like everything is right now.
But let's be honest, if you're listening to this podcast, you've already pre-ordered it.
Yeah, pretty much. Unless you're like me and have a son who's taking up all your money and you have nothing to spend.
Whoa, now. You know that you can just make another one, right? I mean, a 10% off deal on Battlefleet Gothic, that's once in a lifetime.
That's true. But I also need to be able to get to work and make more money.
Yeah. No, oh, now I'm reminded about work.
Never mind. For those who haven't done the pre-order yet, like me, the pre-order gets you an additional Space Marines fleet, which in all fairness can be bought after the game is launched, and multiplayer beta access a few weeks before release. So that should be quite interesting, and this does look like a very awesome game. I'm jonesing to pre-order
at
this point.
Yeah, like we were saying last time, looks lovely.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to add one thing for anybody out there that cares about pre-order issues. Normally, a pre-order bonus comes up and you get it before the game comes out because it's a pre-order bonus, right? Makes sense. However, as I believe you've said, the pre-order bonus here is the Space Marine Fleet. The developer, who I don't know, my bad, has done here is it's not only a pre-order bonus, but that bonus continues for a few months after the release. It will also be available later as DLC, but I think that's really just a good, solid business practice, and you can't fault them for that at all. So they're basically giving you time to see how the game's being reviewed,
yeah.
See if people are liking it, see if your friends buy it, and they're not penalising you for it. And I think that really should be applauded, which is kind of weird to say, because I'm almost going to say you should pre-order it, but pre-ordering is bad, but they're doing it well. But either way, they've done the right thing.
The developer for Battlefleet Gothic, by the way, is Tyndalos Interactive, published by Focus Home Interactive.
Oh, okay, sure. I know Focus. That's about
it. Yeah. I think Focus have done other GW games, haven't they?
I would believe you if you said it, yeah.
Oh, Blood Bowl. They did Blood Bowl.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was good. They seem to know what they're doing then.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's the world of video games in GW. Moving on to the Imperial Data Slate. Bit of a change this week. So for the Data Slate, we decided that since we've covered all the major factions in EC in terms of lore, we thought we'd do something a little bit different. And since Orkta is the more experienced person on this subject, I shall defer to him.
Okay, Warhammer Conquest. Now, we all know that Warhammer is a rich IP that has expanded into many mediums. We all know computer games, obviously. That's what this whole podcast is about. Eternal Crusade, Space Marine, Dawn of War, these are just some of the most recent and successful games. There are plenty of others, but we're not talking about computer games today. We're talking about card games. I find card games to be the happy medium of time and dedication when it comes to getting your 40k fix. A normal tabletop game will average about, let's say, 2 hours. That's not including the months of blood and sweat you put into getting those miniatures tabletop ready. A computer game, 15 minutes, you're in, you're out, job done. Now, Warhammer 40,000 Conquest, or more commonly just Conquest, will last about 45 minutes. Instantly seems like a winner to me. It's a living card game, published by Fantasy Flight Games. If anyone out there has anything to do with board games, you can't swing a snotling without hitting Fantasy Flight. And you'll know that generally, they know what they're doing.
So, hang on. Living card game. I don't know what that is. I know what Magic the Gathering is, but like, I'm an adult and I have like responsibilities, son, you know, work and stuff. I can't be messing around with booster packs, single cards that cost ridiculous amounts of money.
Yeah, that is obviously the problem with collectible card games. But this, my good sir, is a living card game. And all that means is that while the game will still grow and receive expansions, they're not random selections. The expansion is released, you buy the, if you will, booster pack, if you want to think of it that way, and you instantly have all the cards required to play the game.
Oh, so it's like a level playing field kind of thing.
Exactly, that's right. As long as you can afford the expansions, which is probably about £10 every other month, then you can have exactly the same deck as the pros.
Hmm, sounds interesting. So, what is the game? What's it about? Other than 40k, obviously.
Right. Well, that was going to be my first answer, 40k. However, okay, so, thematically, you play one of 8 races fighting over the Traxxas sector. You can bring the full might of either the Space Marines, Astra Militarum, Orcs, Chaos, Dark Eldar, Eldar, Tau, or Tyranids to bear. And you can fight over for dominance over this poor, helpless sector. And soon Necrons are being added, a personal favourite of mine.
Hey, Tomb Kings in space.
Okay, no, they're not Tomb King. Anyway, the first thing you do is assemble your troops. AKA build your deck. Army cards will have a resource cost, attack, health, command, and a special ability. Attack, health, and resource cost are as self-explanatory as you'd imagine. Command, however, is a stat unique to this game. There is a command phase, and when your units have deployed to a planet, whoever wins in this command phase is to reap the benefits of the planets in the form of cards and resources. So a higher command is very useful, as often, whoever has more cards in their hand to draw from and more resources to spend will win the game. Makes sense. Finally, there are special abilities that can do just about anything, from allowing the card to be used in the wrong phase to giving you more resources. And those are only your army cards. You can also have war gear, which you attach to your army units and tend to give bonuses to health or attack. There's also support. A card that you deploy before the fighting begins each turn and will allow for some sort of special ability. For example, deploying extra units if certain conditions are met. Finally, there are event cards. These are played in the heat of battle and will often swing the fight one way or the other, as they allow one player to surprise the other, something that can't be accounted for pre-fight maths. Oh, and the final type of cards are the things that make the game, your Warlord card. Each faction will have a certain playstyle, yes, but each Warlord dictates even further just what that faction can do through their special abilities and signature cards. Signature cards are effectively their bodyguards that must be taken and are unique to that Warlord. So, for example, currently there is a particular Dark Eldar Warlord that is pretty convincingly the strongest Warlord in the game. However, on the flip side, there is another Dark Eldar Warlord that is generally considered to be one of the weakest in the game. So, odd as it may sound, when you're coming into this game, don't think of which faction you want to play. Think of which Warlord you want to play.
Well, that was like ridiculous amounts of information. So, I've built my deck. What comes next?
Oh, right. Okay. Yep. So, deck building. Right. So, you've built your deck. And of course, you've remembered that you can take one ally and put together your ultimate smashing Exterminator Space Marine deck, or your fluffy hit-and-run Shadow Sun Tau deck, and then the turn sequence begins. You start in the deploy phase. You spend resources to play cards. Simple. Generally, at this point, you'll be setting up your support cards ready for the coming fight and deploying your army cards to different planets. Once both of you have done everything you wanted to do, you move on to the deploy phase. This, along with what's in your hand, is the hidden aspect of the game. You both decide which planet to deploy your Warlord to. See, the Warlord is a very powerful card, instantly winning you a command struggle and helping the fight immensely in the battle phase. And it's possible to win by killing the enemy Warlord, of course. Some players plan to win the game this way, by hunting the Warlord, as it's called. So this becomes a guessing game, trying to bluff where you'll be going while deploying your army units. So, your Warlords are deployed, and we move to the command phase. This is where those little command icons that I spoke about earlier come into play on each of your units. Whoever has the most command at each planet wins the command struggle and gets the spoils of war. This will be in the form of drawing extra cards or taking extra resources. Now again, this is a very important part of the game. As I said, whoever has the larger hand and the larger resource pile has more tricks to draw on during the fight itself. And then we come to the battle phase. Now there's a whole load of minutiae to this phase, from ranged units to event cards, as I mentioned. But this is really where the meat of the game is, as the ultimate goal is whoever wins enough planets in the Traxxas sector wins the game.
If you haven't assassinated the Warlord, that is.
Exactly, that's right. Now, you can only ever win the first planet in your line of five, but each planet has an ability that you trigger when you win a battle there. This could be anything from fully heal a target of your choice to routing enemy units and everything in between. With the first planet lost and won, and the holy moly done, you move the planets up, draw a new one, and restart the deployment phase. And that's it. Warhammer Conquest. A card game that will take about 45 minutes. All of the factions mirror the strengths and weaknesses of the tabletop armies pretty well, so you can immerse yourself in the 40k world, and if you love the space marines on the tabletop in the computer game, then you'll probably find their strengths and weaknesses mirrored well onto the mechanics of this game.
Sounds absolutely fascinating. I've actually played a little bit of the game in the past. Never really got massively into it, but I understand you've been getting quite into the game recently.
Ooh, yeah. So let me take you back 2 weeks ago, Gigabyte. I was trawling eBay, as one does, and I found like the whole of Warhammer Conquest cards up to this current expansion for quite the deal. And I bought that, and then I kind of decided I should probably learn to play the game after buying everything. So I did, and I've been to one tournament so far, and I'm going to one this weekend, and then one next weekend as well. Mainly because Fantasy Flight does brilliant prize support at their tournaments. So, I mean, I'm not saying I'm all in, I'm saying I'm balls deep.
Nice.
Yeah. To be fair, I'd recommend it. If you're into 40k, it's a really good game. And if you're, once again, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have some interest in 40k. Let's be fair. And the mechanics are solid. they're not going to blow you away. It's not supremely revolutionary. But if you like the source material, then this is a really good tiding card game.
Awesome. So that brings us to our devotions to the faithful. There haven't been, from what I've seen, I haven't seen any reviews on the EU side of iTunes recently. I've yet to check the US side. But I would say, from what I understand from Carl, there's been a few issues with iTunes reviews. If you have any comments or questions or anything like that, as you'll hear in the outro, probably best to send them to our email, voxarcona@gmail.com, and we shall get those there and most likely read them out on the show.
Of course, don't forget that Arcona is actually a little bit complicated to spell.
Yes, as is Octa, from what we understand.
Yes, not water. Let's be clear on that.
Cool, that leaves us with our thought for the day. Since Octa had this humongous thing about conquest, I think I shall take the thought for the day.
That seems fair.
The blasphemy of the Tyranids is such that only one solution is acceptable. Extermination. There can only be two sides in a fight. Choose carefully, lest you and I find ourselves on different sides. Chaplain Orton, Cassius.
The man.
Indeed. I've been Gigabyte. He has been Octa. We are Vox Arcona, and we shall see you next time.
Goodbye, everyone.
The Adeptus Terra thanks you for tuning into tonight's broadcast of Vox Arcona, a production of Whole Suite Media. Be sure to check our website, iTunes, or Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered Voxcasts and more. You can follow us on Twitter at Vox Arcona. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to voxarcona@gmail.com. Return next week for yet another communique from the Vox Arcona.